Welcome to the CBSSports.com basketball podcast. I'm your host, Zach Harper. I've got Matt Moore using one of those Skype soup cans with a string attached to it. I think that's what they used back in the day.
Them crazy contraptions.
We had what I like to call a big baby full of games last night.
It was amazing. It was really incredible. It was maybe the best I've had since the start of the season in terms of watching games. It was really fantastic. You know, even with a couple of blowouts, they were still interesting to see. We didn't talk Nets Heat yesterday, and probably should have talked about it more. But then it turned out that it's okay we didn't talk about it because, wow, I mean, Brooklyn's got some issues. Brooklyn has some issues that are not storm related.
Like, yeah, but Jordan or Gerald Wallace was out. So
I just, last night I was like, well, to be fair, Gerald Wallace is out. To be more fair, it wouldn't have mattered. But
right,
I mean, their defense is going to have so many problems. It's just going to have so many problems. And Devin Karpetian over at thebrooklyngame.com had a piece talking about how the Nets have the worst defense in the league and why that's a good thing. And basically talking about, like, well, they've got to improve in these areas, and they've got to improve in these areas. And I'm like, man, I'm watching this defense operate, and I'm like, I don't know. Like, there's a long way to go. The Nets this morning have the worst efficiency differential in the NBA. They are worse than the Detroit Pistons in points produced versus allowed.
God, the poor Pistons. We're just using them as the seller, and rightfully so right now. But I feel bad for them.
They hung last night with the Kings, which says a lot about where they're at.
Well,
they hung, and
that's an accomplishment.
Greg Monroe had a triple-double.
Sure.
But it's not good.
He broke the curse of the CBS Sports writing motif.
Exactly, yeah. For the first time, I actually profiled a player, and he didn't perform terribly. Granted, his team still lost and is now 4 or 5 on the season. But,
yeah.
You know, hey, at least he played well.
Baby steps. Here's the thing. Billy King came out and said that the Nets were designed to defeat the Heat. And, that's kind of dumb. But if you look at it, like, the way they are designed, it is somewhat similar to Miami in the fact that they're going to have to play defense on the perimeter to really affect. And then you have to hope, you know, Brook Lopez and Chris Humphreys can rebound and end possessions because they don't really have rim protectors. Kind of like how Miami was built last year. I mean, Bosch did a good job defending the rim, but not your typical rim defender. And so, in a way, I can see that. Unfortunately, Gerald Wallace is not LeBron James. And Keith Bogans is not Shane Battier. Joe Johnson is better defensively than Dwayne Wade right now. But even then, I mean, they don't have the system. Like, Avery Johnson is a fine coach, I guess. But he doesn't have Eric Spoelstra's system.
To me, and I wrote about this yesterday when I wrote about both the game and those quotes, like, if it just turned out that way, I'd be like, okay, like, you know, you went out and got the best guys you could, and it just so happens, oh, like, we've got, like, a dynamic stat-stuffing small forward, and we've got, like, an explosive, high-scoring, good defending shooting guard, and, you know, we have a versatile low post man who can score face-up or in the block. Like, that kind of makes sense to me, but to say we geared this team to challenge Miami is ridiculous. And it's ridiculously stupid because you did not. Because you did not go out and get the best talent available. You got good talent. And that's fine. Like, I talked with Devin about this, about how the Nets are going to be better, and that's what matters going into Brooklyn. Like, just that they're not horrible.
Right.
That's fine. But don't sit there and try and sell me that you have built this team to contend with Miami. I'm not overreacting to one game. This is what would happen in a 7-game series. It would be a lot of last night because that team is in no way equipped to hang. And, you know, what was interesting is really quietly in the BrooklynGame.com raid reviews, really quietly the phrase, oh, Joe Johnson spent a lot of time in isolation. And we were promised that wasn't going to happen. That wasn't going to happen at all. It was, that would never happen. And that's that will be a part of the offense, and it's still going to be bad. And I like Joe Johnson a lot. I'm a big Joe guy, but, you know, I think Brooklyn will get it together. They're going to wind up in those late playoff seats, but this team, there is no way I can see. And everyone talks about, you talk about the system, but my problem is you don't have to have like a good system. You have to have tips. That's how good you have to be.
Yeah.
You have to have a defensive coach so good that he can make bad defenders good. That's where they're at defensively right now. And the offense is struggling. And, you know, that was the one thing they were going to count on. And even that's having problems. So, you know, Miami turned on the Jets last night. They're a fantastic team. The Nets were without Gerald Wallace. But, you know, try and gear your team to try and beat Boston to try and get to the conference finals. Gear your team to try and be better than New York, which you are not right now. You know, do those things. Baby steps. Don't try and don't aim low is basically what I'm saying. Have very low expectations. I get the idea of, like, you want to be a – you always want to contend for a championship. My problem is, if that was the case, then they really shouldn't have traded for Joe Johnson, you know, and given Brook Lopez all that money and basically said, these are our guys. If you're like, well, we're still a work in progress, that's one thing. But they want to win now, and this team is not built to win at a relevant level right now.
Here's my rebuttal to that, is we are talking about Billy King, and I fully believe that he thought he was building a team to contend with Miami. Only he did it in Billy King manners, and so it ends up like hilariously mismatched when they go against each other.
Right.
I mean, that like I take Billy King at his word. I think he looked at Miami last year and thought, you know what, if I got Joe Johnson and we kept Darren Williams, I bet I could do some things. I bet we could go at them. Oh my God, Andre Blatch is available? Yeah, well, he's a perfect backup for us. I mean, I honestly believe that he did that. You know, I like what Brooklyn did in the sense that, you know, you're right, Devin's right. Like, they had to be good the first year in Brooklyn. Like, that's how you steal fans. That's how you get the fan base, you know, really cemented in there. It's just... that team has a very definitive ceiling.
Yeah.
And if you're fine with, hey, we're going to be a good team for a while, and then we'll see what happens when the contracts expire in a few years, I'm fine with that. But don't, like, and you can't just come out there and say, hey, we're not trying to win a championship. Of course they're trying to win a championship. They just, their ceiling is, you know, the championship's on the fifth floor and their ceiling's on the third.
And like, they're going to go on a run and they're going to look really good for a while. And
oh, sure. I mean, it's a good team.
Yeah, it's a good team. You know, what I'm focusing on right now is just like the idea that, you know, again, it's one where I feel like, and they do this a lot where they talk so much, like the organization does. Like, they really want to make noise to increase their awareness as like this new brand in Brooklyn, and I get that, but they're doing it in all sorts of ways that are like trying to call attention to themselves and trying to build themselves as something that they're not versus teams that actually are do it in a much more understated way. It's bad when I can tell you definitively that the Boston Celtics are a lot more low-key than you.
Yeah. I mean, Boston's typically kind of a mild-mannered organization and fan base, so it doesn't shock me that much. You know, they don't really like to talk out of turn.
Like, but part of it is, but like, I mean, they talk about championships and how Boston's about championships, and they win all the championships, and banner 18, and yet they are much quieter about where they're at and what they're trying to do. They talk a lot about Miami because they've been there and they've actually played them, but in general, like, they'll say, you know, we know what we're trying to do. That's the phrase that they use.
Yeah.
So I just think it's very different. Although, you know, I mean, it's not like the Celtics. I said this last night. Celtics continue to have problems too. I mean, we saw this last year, and they'll be fine. It's irritating to me because I'm supposed to just ignore this, and I know that they're going to work out of these problems, but I also can't deny how bad they are right now because the Boston Celtics probably should have lost to the Wizards last night. They've played the Wizards in two close games, and when that's the level that you're at, that's a bad sign.
You know, I have to say that it's quite enjoyable, and I don't even know why, but I love watching you on Twitter rant about how bad the Celtics are, but then have to give the caveat of, I know that they're going to work it out, and I know I'm not supposed to do this, but Jesus, look at them. Yeah. It's a lot of fun to see because there's part of you, just it screams through the computer, there's part of you that wants to just say, they're not going to be fine. They're not going to win a championship. This is not okay. Like, this is a problem, but, you know.
Yeah.
History shows us that they're probably going to be okay up to a certain point.
But part of it is there, well, there are things that I can see as being like, okay, they're going to improve. Like Paul Pierce is, you know, after the first championship, well, the B championship, Pierce went the route of, I'm going to work my way into shape during the season. Like that was,
yeah.
He got a big monkey off his back in that summer and partied a lot. And that was just, you know, so that's fine. Garnett, I think, is going to get there. Like he's, you know, and everyone's like, well, he's playing well now. He's playing well. He's just not where he was last year, and that's what they need him to be at.
Yeah.
You know, Rondo's great now because Rondo's just singularly great. But my part of me is like, who are they going to round into shape? And it's like, Celtics fans really believe that Avery Bradley is going to come back and going to be some sort of combination of Michael Jordan, Reggie Miller, mixed in with Ron Artest. Like, that's pretty much what I've gotten the impression that Avery Bradley is going to be. I may not have seen all of his games because I apparently missed that part, but that's apparently what he's going to bring them when he gets back. You know, Terry's going to find places in the offense, but I will hold out that I have concerns about both Terry and Green. Terry and Green are the two that I'm like, Terry slid last year, and this is a new team, and new teams don't always work out no matter how good the fit may look. And Jeff Green, we've got very little evidence to believe that he's going to turn.
Yeah, I mean, the Jeff Green thing is just Celtics fans being hopeful, which is, you know, I don't think
they're dependent on that. That's my problem. Is like, that's a big part of what they want to do. Is, well, if Jeff Green is everything that we believe it to be, I mean, we talked about this before the season, right? Where it's like, if you have all these ifs, like, well, as long as, you know, if Jason Terry fits into the role better than Ray Allen, and if Jeff Green lives up to all his potential, and if Darko Milicic isn't Darko Milicic, it's like, well, those are ifs and not likelihoods.
See, I mean, I don't believe in Jeff Green. I never really have. But with Jason Terry, I do think he'll be fine. Like, yeah, he had a big slide last year, but I still have a hard time looking at last year and thinking, you know, that is what the player is just because of how crazy everything was with the lockout shortened season and how little practice time there was and little recovery time. Like, Maybe it is a sign. Maybe it accelerated the process for some guys, but it's just hard for me to look at that and be like, yeah, that's where the guy's going. And the fact that he did go into a new team and a new system and everything, he's not playing well, but with someone like Jason Terry, I just don't think he's done yet. Now, I've thought the same thing about Lamar Odom, and that's proving to be quite wrong because it doesn't look like he's going to get it at all. But Terry is a different player. Like, I think Terry is able to be a lot more focused when he, you know, when the game is on the line. And I still think he's extremely dangerous and can be so on a consistent basis.
I do too. I mean, just one of my favorite players. It's just that I just have all these concerns about what they need to be able to, but part of it is, I also know what's probably going to happen is it's going to be a mix of both, right? Where they're going to look okay. They're going to get a little bit better. They'll have a streak where they look really good and then they'll kind of back off a little bit. And they'll probably slide in at a lower playoff spot maybe than maybe we expected, although with the Pacers, you know, bowing out, I don't know. But even if that happens, then they're going to be able to – they'll just shift gears, and then the playoffs will go, and then they'll really grind it down and be able to do this. I will say Brandon Bass is carrying him a lot, and that, you know, that he deserves a lot of credit for what he's doing because, like, late last night, he pretty much put that game away for them.
That should be terrifying in itself, like – If Brandon Bass has to carry you at any point in a season, yep. That should be worrisome. I know Celtics fans really like Bass. He's a fine role player, but not a guy I would ever want to have to count on. But he is playing pretty damn good.
The best game of the night, honestly, was Nuggets Rockets. That was one of the most fun games.
That three quarters court alley-oop. I mean, we don't get enough of those anymore since Jason Williams isn't on the Kings anymore and also not 22 years old. But that is one of the most exciting passes in basketball.
He caught it, and I saw him look up, and he always looks up right at that spot. And you actually will see a smile go on Andre Miller's face, which is pretty rare.
Yeah.
And I was watching it. It was like everything happened in slow motion because, like, he looks up, he sees it, I see him start to pull, you know, cock it back for the extension, and I'm like, is he going to? And I slowly start to get out of my seat as he throws it. My arms go out wide just as Free catches it, and I just flipped out. Yeah. It was one of those plays that I like. There are a handful of plays you can do that I will still flip out watching. There's a handful of shots and a handful of things. Like LeBron does stuff, and I'm not shocked. I'm just like, I just shake my head because I'm just like, holy God. But that one, I was just like, are you kidding me? It was nuts.
I did. I was at the Timberwolves game at the time, but they've added hardwire internet to the horrible wireless internet at the Target Center this year. So now I can actually keep an eye on some games if I need to. And so I had League Pass up on my computer, and I saw your tweet about the alley-oop, and I was like, oh boy. So I got over to the Nuggets game, rewound it a little bit, and you see where, like, when Andre Miller starts to throw it, I looked at where Kenneth Faried is, and he needs to be a certain distance, obviously, to time it perfectly, but it just, where Faried is, like, you look at him and think, oh, there's no way. Like, it's just such a, obviously it's an alley-oop, so there's so much timing to it, but he's 25 feet from the basket when Dre throws the pass. And it's just fun to see that moment. And like, and it wasn't, he didn't catch at the rim. Like, he's kind of awkwardly away from the rim and still, you know, throws it down. And it's just, that's just a fun play. All right, my bias is going to show here, but what was a more fun play? The three-quarter court alley-oop or Jamal Crawford nutmegging Nando DeColo?
I'm going to go with the three-quarter alley-oop because the way that Manimal moves, like, I consider that to be more stylistically pleasing. That, and, you know, it was nice because it was like Nando DeColo. It was like, oh, like, you know, here's like a kind of unknown guy off of the French national team. And like, you know, maybe he's actually going to turn out to be like one of the more legit guys. Like, the Spurs have a habit of, he's got his embarrassing. Like, why doesn't so many European players have those singularly embarrassing moments? Because like, that's what he's going to be known for now. Like, he's going to be that guy that Jamal Crawford nutmegged.
You know, I wonder if it's a, like, kind of a cultural thing, like almost an initiation of the fact that European player comes over here and takes a job from an American player, essentially, right? And maybe guys go harder at him because of that. Like, I think that when American players go over there, there seems to be a sense of, you know, you've got to go at the American player because Americans are typically the best players in the world and the best basketball country in the world. Not per capita, that would be Lithuania, but, you know, that, like, there's this kind of measuring up factor, I think. And so maybe it's let's see if DeColo is ready for the NBA. And so I don't think if Jamal Tinsley is out there, Jamal Crawford's going through Tinsley's legs on that play. Like, I think he has a chance to embarrass a new guy who, if he gets embarrassed in a foreign country with everyone laughing at him in a language he isn't all that comfortable with yet, you know, you'd try to break down the opponent a little bit, and maybe that's a factor. Maybe I'm reading way too much into the cultural aspect of it, but it seems like guys coming over here, our guys going over there, there is kind of this, you know, there's a little bit extra on certain plays.
I will say maybe the best part of that play that makes it better than the Andre Miller alley-oop is DeAndre Jordan's reaction.
Yeah, and in Trey Tompkins' face.
Yeah.
I mean, his, like, obviously, DeAndre Jordan starts throwing out expletives and asking questions about what he just saw, but Trey Tompkins, his expression does not change. Like, he looks like a teenage girl who just found out her dad got her Bieber tickets. Like, that's the expression on his face. Like, it's a fantastic expression. You couple that quiet, like, dumbfounded excitement with DeAndre Jordan just asking what the expletive the whole time. Like, that, the reaction is kind of what makes it, because, you know, Jamal got fouled on the play and everything.
I two more things on Rockets Nuggets. One, Andre Iguodala, what he did to James Harden.
Woo!
Defensively.
I started watching it this morning, and good God.
I mean, it's a bad matchup for Harden because Iguodala is so much bigger, but God, like, Iguodala just, he knows where to be, and he's got, here's the awesome thing I love about watching Iguodala work defensively. He'll miss a shot, and so many guys are focused either on the foul, or mad at themselves, or whatever, and even when he hits one, Like, he's immediately targeting Harden. There is no, like, okay, well, I'll get back up the floor, and then I'll find my guy. Like, he's like, boom, automatically switched over, engage. I got to lock this down. He caught him in transition. That's really where you have to. And we talked about yesterday how Harden leaks out. They did a great job of getting back.
Oh, yeah.
To stop that. That was a huge part of that game. And then the other thing is, like, I've become – I don't know how this happened. I have become this gigantic Corey Brewer fan. I don't really understand where this has come from. I liked him. Like, I had experience talking to him during the 2011 finals when he never played. And then I saw some good things last year. I am telling you, the guy's becoming an offensively better Tony Allen. Like, he's less insane. But he does those random things and causes havoc. The shooting, I don't think, is going to hold.
Yeah, probably. I mean, although, I mean...
He worked just, a lot. I mean, he talked... Guys always say they worked on stuff. Like, Brewer talked a lot about how much he shot. Like, he made it seem like you have no idea how much I shot this summer.
Yeah, and he... Just looking at his shot compared to when he was here in Minneapolis, it just looks so much more comfortable for him, which is a huge thing for guys learning how to shoot, is feeling comfortable in the shot. Yeah. And... You know, maybe the shooting won't hold to the degree, but it's definitely going to be better. And that's a guy who has legitimately improved over the last couple of years to where, you know, maybe he won't have the biggest year-to-year improvement, but that guy's got to get a Most Improved Player award at some point just based on where he was and where he's going.
Yep.
And maybe it doesn't have to happen this year, but at some point he deserves that kind of recognition because guys like him can find their way out of the league very quickly, so Wes quick. Johnson. And you have to work your ass off to get to that point, and he's clearly doing that. Not that other guys don't work hard, but like you can see tangible results with him just in his form, in his comfort, and in the results.
He did great work on Delfino last night. Delfino got a few of his. Delfino would make a great Celtic. he's got that awesome ability to okay, there's a broken play, and he just like. Quietly anticipates the offensive rebound, slides to the little spot, and just kind of subtly waves. And Then all of a sudden it's, wait, who was covering Delfino? Because it was a broken play, and you know Brewer's like up the court, and then Delfino catches it and nails it. Like, he would be awesome as a Celtic in that regard.
He's like a talented, like coordinated Sasha Papovich.
Yeah, that's a good comparison. So I think he's going to be huge for them this year. I don't think Houston... You know, Houston's like, you know, they've fallen out from Beard Sanity last week. I don't think they're sunk. I think they still got some good things. McHale's got to play those damn rookies.
I don't know. Patrick Patterson was good.
You got two guys in the top, what, 18, and you're not playing them a minute?
I think that there's just such a... I mean, if Patrick Patterson's playing well, you know, why should Royce White play over him? And I like Royce White a lot. I think he's going to be really good. But, you know, if Patterson's playing well, why should White play over him? And Carlos Delfino gives them something that Terrence Jones can't, which is outside shooting to stretch the floor. And I know that's big for McHale. So maybe that's the reason why Terrence Jones isn't out there. Like, you can say he's more of a four, but then you're just getting into the, you know, playing over Patrick Patterson, playing over Royce White, like, into that whole jumble. Monchiunas, like I would play him more or you know at all, but Cole Aldrich has been decent this season in his limited minutes. Like it's not like Darko Milicic is taking minutes from these guys. Like they do have decent options that they're giving minutes to.
Marcus Morris played 20 minutes last 18:52 last night. He had 3 points on 1 of 7 shooting, 5 rebounds, and was minus 15.
Yeah. I mean, he hasn't been that bad all season.
He's been bad for 2 seasons. I mean, I just can't see I would split them as I'm not even saying like play him heavy minutes. I'm just saying you got all this versatility. Let's split it up a little bit.
What about the idea of making like if Royce White and if Terrence Jones haven't like overtly shown Kevin McHale that they should be playing over Marcus Morris. That could just be stubbornness by McHale, but I find it hard to believe that if these guys showed that they were that much better than him in practice, that they wouldn't be playing. And I could be completely wrong about that, but isn't there something... I mean, Houston has nothing to play for in the sense that they're still trying to build and figure out what they are.
Yeah.
So I get why you would say, hey, throw the rookies out there and let them help figure it out. But at the same time, you know, there is something to be said of, well, why can't these guys earn minutes over the 2 year veteran
who's not playing that well. If they ever see the floor and if the impact is, but they start showing stuff in games. I have a hard time. Like, I get that there's the practice that impacts these guys a lot. Like, it's one thing I try and talk about is like, look, we don't see these guys on a daily basis, and the coaches do, so they have a better estimate of where they're at. But if he does let them on the floor and they start producing and he still keeps them at the same minute distribution, it's going to be one of those.
Oh sure, yeah, and I'm not saying you're wrong about this. I'm just kind of playing devil's advocate of, you know, maybe these guys haven't earned it over Marcus Morris, which should tell you something about where they are in their development. And that's pure speculation, but.
The Rockets, for shooting 37% last night, actually played pretty well. They would have been okay if Chandler Parsons hadn't had an off game. That was really kind of the biggest component of it, was Parsons just had – he just had a game where his handle was off. You know those games where you got a guy that's got a pretty good handle and he just can't dribble?
Yeah.
That was one of those.
Brandon Roy was like that against Toronto this weekend. It, you know, he's got a good handle, and yeah, you can say the knees and all that, but he literally could not dribble a basketball.
Your Minnesota Timberwolves, man. You were there last night.
Ooh, that was ugly. That was an awful, awful game to witness live until the Wolves got it together in the second half and started running offense and started making plays. And then, you know, they hit some shots, got some distance, and then it was a lot of fun.
Your Minnesota Timberwolves are 3-1 on the season.
They have a stretch starting last night where they had, over the next 2 weeks, they had 5 of 7 games at home. And I've said they need to win at least 4, probably 5 of those games to really survive the month of November until Kevin Love gets back. And it's winnable games. You know, they've got Indiana, who's not playing well, coming in Friday night. They'll have Charlotte next week. They'll have, I know they're in Chicago and in Dallas. And then Denver comes. So, you know, they've got some tough games and some very winnable games. And they've, you know, so far they're taking care of business. It's just one game against the Magic. But this is a stretch where they've got to come out of that with only a couple of losses.
They're 3-1. Dallas is 4-1. No Dirk, no Kevin Love.
Clearly, does this mean that the Mavericks and the Wolves are doing the most with the least when their players who do the most with the least are out? There's some kind of like exponential math of doing the most with the least talent that is just overtly saturating from the GM survey.
It is to me. It's you know, look at those. It's like, what do they have in common? And I don't want to go too far because I don't want to discount the fact that Darren Collison's plan is brains out. And, you know, your guy Pekovic is a pretty big intimidator, and they've got, you know, they've got some talent there in both places. I think O.J. Mayo is really – that's a huge thing that O.J. Mayo is actually producing. That's actually surprised me, even being an O.J. guy, for him to have – he started off rough in that first game and has really responded and is playing better. You know, Andre Kirilenko and Derek Williams and Luke Britt. But I don't want to discount the production of the players, but, man, to me it gets back to coaching.
Like, oh, Rick Adelman's such a good coach, and obviously Carlisle's brilliant.
You got those guys, and, you know, Adelman's winning with defense because he's got to be able to survive until his offense gets back. And Carlisle's winning with offense because he knows he really can't hang defensively even when Dirk gets back. So, I mean, it's been really impressive by those two. What has not been impressive, and it is time for us to discuss,
Ruh-roh.
The Los Angeles Lakers.
Your
1-4 Los Angeles Lakers.
That's not a good record officially. If you win 20% of the games of your season, you're not going to make the playoffs. Most seasons,
it's going to be hard.
Makes it difficult.
If you do that, you're going to need a few things to go your way in order to make the playoffs.
Makes it very difficult. These guys just can't put the ball in the basket. Why is Ron Artest taking 12 shots in a game? Why is he taking 6 threes in a game?
You know, I don't think that – I actually don't blame him for that, and the reason is this. I talked about this last night with – one of our social guys, we were talking about in CBS Campfire, our little chat program where we discuss the day's events and make off-color jokes we can't share with you. He was asking, why is this happening? And I was saying, like, the Mavericks were the first one to do it, and then everybody has duplicated this, which is you do everything you can to get Ron Artest the ball on the perimeter with an open look. Yeah. That is what you do defensively, is you beg him to shoot. And you, like, because your options, anybody else on that roster, essentially, you're pretty much cool with shooting.
Yeah.
Or you don't want to shoot. He's the only guy. I mean, I'm looking at the guys who played last night. The guys who played last night, Pau Gasol, Dwight Howard, Kobe Bryant, Steve Blake, Devin Ebanks, Jordan Hill, Darius Morris, Antoine Jameson. I would rather Artest take a shot than any of those guys. I will take my chances with Artest over anybody else, even Darius Morris.
Can't we just have Kobe shoot more?
Isn't that really the answer?
Because one, that's more fun aesthetically.
And two,
it's a smarter decision.
I've been so critical of Kobe Bryant over the years in shot selection, and I have to give him credit again. He didn't start gunning until late when he had to. Like, his percentage was bad early in the game.
Yeah.
And he had to drag it up, but, like, he's really trying to do what he's supposed to do in the offense. And then it just doesn't work at all. And so then finally, like, he's not inserted because he's keeping a standard rotation of your rest from the beginning of the third through the beginning of the fourth and ended about the six to five minute mark. And then by the time he gets in, it's too late, so he's having to try and score to make up like an 11-point differential. It's like the same story that's gone on every year of his career since Shaq left, outside of 2009, 2010. Like, it's amazing that this is what they've come to. They, outside of Howard and Bryant last night, listen to this. They shot 11 of 46 outside of Howard and Bryant.
That's officially not good.
11 out of 46.
I mean, that's Rodney Stuckey territory.
24%. Like, and defensively they're bad. And that was the thing is with this game, it's like people made the comparison. Like, Sean Heiken, one of my writers over HP last night, was like, you know, the Heat started off, I think, like 8-7 in 2010. And I'm like, yes, but the Heat were losing games like Paul Millsap hits a fadeaway three at the buzzer.
Right.
Like, they were in these games, and teams were getting huge emotional wins over playing this megalith team. The Lakers are getting smoked from beginning to end.
It's possible, though, that obviously they're one, the Lakers, and two, they reloaded with all this talent. Like, they are going to get the best effort out of the opponent every night because I think there is a lot of validity to that. And I honestly think 3 months from now, we're going to laugh about the 1-4 start.
I do too.
But it does, like, their bench. I didn't think the bench was going to be that big of a deal. Not that I thought they would be good, but I just thought they have too much firepower. It won't matter. But the bench had 12 points on 15 shots. I mean, it's just a bad bench. And you say, oh, Jordan Hill grabbed 12 rebounds, 7 were offensive. And what happened with those possessions where he grabbed the rebounds? Like, he doesn't help them convert those at all.
Yeah, but I think it's the one where it's like Jordan Hill is honestly one of their best players because at least he's trying. Like, at least the effort's there. The part of me is like, you know, I'm not sure on the injury situation. I'll have to look it up. But like Earl Clark, Chris Duhon, Jody Meeks, 0 minutes. Like, why is no one, you know, or why are we going, you know, what's the thought, you know, if you're not getting production from your bench, why aren't you going with different guys?
Yeah, I don't think they've reported any – if Meeks is hurt, I don't think they've reported anything about it. Earl Clark, I know, had a groin injury.
Chris Duhon's
still himself, so that's going to be – that's hard for him to get minutes over that ailment.
But it's one of those where it's like Chris Duhon is like – is Darius Morris at 1 of 6 in 12 minutes?
Yeah, and I like Darius Morris, but if he's not making shots, like, why wouldn't you put Chris Duhon out there? Even in his most Chris Duhon-ness abilities, he's probably not going to turn the ball over. He's probably not going to take shots, let alone miss them.
Kobe Bryant's got this bad foot, 37 minutes, 17 seconds. Like, again, it's not that I don't think that they're going to be – that they're going to get this figured out. It's that I'm trying to say, like – they lost, but the process kind of shows that everything's going to be okay. I'm saying they have to completely turn this damn thing around in order to get where they need to go. And they, I think that they still will because the talent wins out in the NBA, but they are bad. That's what I'm trying to say is, like, I'm trying to make it clear that this is not like, oh, they're kind of struggling. They are bad.
Yeah, they looking at their schedule coming up, they've got the Warriors and the Kings. They should be able to fix that.
Don't they have like 6 home games?
Yeah, they've got Warriors, Kings, Spurs, Suns, Rockets, Nets. That's a very winnable and, you know, right the ship kind of schedule. But they did lose to Portland pretty badly, you know, and, you know, not everyone is the Pistons. Like, the Kings are the Pistons, and the Suns will probably be the Pistons for them, but, you know, they can't let James Harden get loose. They can't let the Spurs three-point shooting get loose. They can't even really let the Warriors get loose. The Warriors are dangerous right now, I think.
I don't think the Warriors are a team that you want to jerk around with, because they've got depth, versatility, and defense.
And maybe they go 5-1 in this stretch and they, you know, improve to 6-5 and things start to look a lot better. But even though they have a home stretch, it's not, you know, I don't think they can overlook opponents at this point with where they are on both ends of the floor, really.
One thing I think is a concern is, you know, their big problem right now is defense. The offense was a huge problem last night, but everyone's kind of in agreement the defense is their big issue. Golden State, San Antonio, Phoenix, Houston, Brooklyn. Those are all offensive teams. Those are all, you know, like the Kings, they'll be able to destroy because they can't score.
Maybe, but I think the Kings' athleticism does pose problems. Like they like to leak out and run a little bit, and I'm not sure that this Lakers team wants to do that right now.
Yeah, and that's the other thing is you've got Sacramento, San Antonio, Phoenix, Houston. Those are 4 fast teams.
Yeah,
like, those are really fast teams. You know, and again, it's like they can win 2 games and things will look a lot different.
Oh,
like,
sure.
You know, 2 games and it's 3-4 versus, you know, 1-4. But I just, it's my job to be able to say what's been going on and what we've seen and what the situation is, and to not just be like, well, you know, we kind of have a narrative. I was thinking about this yesterday and trying to explain to people why I pay attention to these early season results. And the best example I have is the 2008 Bulls. That's the best example I have because the 2008 Bulls team was a team that was supposed to contend for the Eastern Conference title. It was going to be the Pistons, Boston, and Chicago.
Yeah.
With that team that had Ben Gordon and Kirk Heinrich when they were, you know, still considered really good players, Joakim Noah, Ben Wallace, and that team just cratered. I mean, it got out of the gate badly and it cratered. And that happens. And so I'm not saying that this Lakers team is that team. I don't think this, you know, Kobe Bryant's better than Ben Gordon considerably. Like, they have phenomenal talent, which is why they win so many games. But I also can't sit there and not notice the fact that this is not just they're kind of having a rough time. Like, there's teams that I can look at and look at the records and look record and go, like, the Clippers, I think, are an example where not just with a win, like, last night was kind of an outlier, but I also think the Cavs win was an outlier because of Deion Waiters hitting contested threes. Like, the Clippers are a really good team. You know, regardless of their record, like, they're a really good team. You know, I think that there's a number of other teams that are really good regardless of their record. They've still shown what they need to show they're there. Like, the Pacers, you know, are 2-3 right now, and they obviously have problems with Granger, but they're not bad. They're just, well, they're struggling and they're having some issues and they're trying to figure some things out without Granger, but they're probably going to be able to solve it. You know, Jeff Teague played really well last night down the stretch to get the Hawks the win. But the Lakers, on the other hand, I'm just like, no, that team is just bad right now. They are definitively, and, you know, for the first game, I was like, well, they're still figuring things out. And the second game, it was like, well, you know, they've got some issues they need to work out, but they're getting there. And now it's, no, they are bad. They are bad right now, and they have to get good. Not soon, but, I mean, it's one where, here is a legitimate question. At what point do we reach the point where it's like, okay, now this is not good? Like, is it 1-7, 1-8? Does it have to be 1-10?
No, I think that they just have to be playing good basketball by January. Like, I really don't think it's, 1-10, we have to worry, Mike Brown has to go, and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, at one point, you're so far under 500. Like, I'm actually asking what the bar is. Would it be, like, 1-15 for you to be like, okay? Like, what would it take? Do you think they could they crawl out of a 1-15 hole? They're not going to do this. I'm saying...
Right. I mean, it's hard for me to really, like, consider that because they're not going to go 1-15 because they play the Kings twice in the next couple of weeks. Right. But it is – I don't know. Like, I guess if they're like 10-30, I would worry. Like, that's when I would think, like, all right, like, this team, like, so all the
20 games under 500.
Yeah, that's when I'll start worrying. Just for the simple fact that all they have to do is get to the playoffs. And then I feel like the playoffs are just such a different game. And the Celtics have proven this, you know, over a couple of years. And the Lakers actually used to prove this with Shaq rounding himself into shape and everything. You just have to get to the playoffs, and then you can kind of start fresh. Doesn't mean you will, but that is a little bit of a reset for them. And if it looks like they're in danger of missing the playoffs, then I'll worry. But it's such a Dolly Parton team. They're so top heavy, but that it's hard to not notice like the assets, you know. But you know, it's
tactfully done, Zach.
Sure, yeah, why not? It's just hard to believe they're not gonna get it together for me. Like, it's just, the questions are certainly there.
It's just a matter of, I guess I'm just trying to figure out at what point we're not being silly. And it's one where it's like, I don't think they're going to get there. I think that they'll probably write the shit. Like, I told Darius Soriano of forumblueandgold.com yesterday on Twitter, I was like, I think by next Tuesday, you'll feel much better about this team and they'll be fine. And then they went out and absolutely crapped the bed against the Jets.
But, all right, let's, you know, your timeline for that, let's say they win all those games through next Tuesday. That's home wins against the Warriors, the Kings, and then a win against the Spurs. Like, if they can win the next three games and they beat the Spurs, even you know, at home in November, you know, that's not a huge game, but that's a sign of, hey, we're kind of figuring it out. And I think that, you know, if your timeline is true, winning the next three games would be a huge relief. Because it would be a quality opponent in the Warriors and a quality opponent in the Spurs.
You want to know something weird? They're not on national television until the 30th of November.
It's like David Stern knew.
That's exactly what I was thinking. Like, it's like he knew this was going to happen. It's all been scripted.
It just shows you the entire league is scripted.
So tonight. Let's see, we got
One quick note. It's weird that Deion Waiters followed up that awesome game with a 12-point-15 shot effort. Never would have thought that would happen.
I know, it's odd. It's, you know, he's
not a roller coaster at all.
And in related news, both the Hornets and Magic are set to completely surprise the league and show us experts completely. The Sixers held them to 62 points.
I'm gonna pitch this to you on the podcast because I think I'm gonna do it anyway. I really want to just start tracking contract year games. And Brandon Jennings had a 19-point-20 shot contract year game last night, and it just tickles me that he is strictly gunning for the contract right now. Like, it doesn't look like he's doing anything within the team concept most nights, and it's a lot of fun. I mean, because I'm not a Bucks fan.
Well, in his defense, I'll say he's actually played well. Last night, they were in that zone last night. The Grizzlies right now are the team you don't want to meet in a dark alley. It's how I was referred to it. Like, that's the team you don't want to meet in a dark alley right now because they're dangerous as all get out. They figured it. That Clippers loss, I think, pissed them off, and they really kind of got themselves centered, and they figured out a lot, and they are making such smart decisions. When Jared Bayless is hitting from the outside, you know the team is clicking. Yeah. So.
I was going to make fun of the fact that he's shooting 40% on the year. But that's actually Brandon Jennings' career field goal percentage is 39.3%, so he's actually playing pretty well.
On the way up, man. Yeah. On the way up. So Bulls Thunder tonight. Thunder have obviously looked kind of shaky. They've gotten some quiet, dominating wins in between the kind of disappointing, more public losses.
Yeah.
The Bulls have quietly just been the Bulls. You know, I've got a big thing coming up on the 4-point play today, talking about how the Bulls are going to attack Westbrook and vice versa. What do you see being what do you see for this one?
I like the way I mean, this is great analysis. I like the way Chicago plays the pick and roll. their coach might have figured something out. I was looking at film for the 4-point play, and they just make you take a jumper off the pick and roll. Yeah. And if you're hitting, that's great. They'll make adjustments, but it's such a better shot than them getting into the rim and you know, drawing fouls or getting layups or whatever. And it's going to be up to Westbrook tonight. Like, he's got to knock down that 15-foot shot coming off the pick and roll, and if he does, I love the Thunder's chances. I still like the Thunder's chances even if he doesn't do that because Durant's still good. But this is a situation where he has not shot well outside of the restricted area this year, and he's going to get plenty of opportunities to knock down mid-range jumpers. And I think that, you know, this isn't a make-or-break game for him this season, but if he can have a good game tonight knocking down those jumpers, I think he's out of his funk instantly.
For him, it's interesting because he's better on the drive when he's kind of out of control and not in the half-court set or he's in mid-transition.
Yeah.
And he's better – the only way he hits that jumper, and that's what I'm focusing on this morning, is the only way he hits that jumper is if he runs the same – if he runs that pick and roll, when he has to do the exact same things and be very patient and in rhythm. If he's not a guy that can take jumpers and hit them in situations in which he's not comfortable.
Yeah.
If you rush him into a jumper, he's going to miss it. He has a penchant to do that sometimes. So I think that's going to be, you know, one of the big things. And I will say, I was looking at the video, and Ashik was a huge factor against him the last time.
Sure, yeah.
He was a major point in contesting at the rim, and so it's going to be interesting to see who takes over that role. You know, if Taj can manage to be big enough and play big enough to challenge him there when Noah's not in, and how that's going to work out. That's going to be a big test, I think, for the Bulls defense. Maybe the best one that they've had.
And I think against this Thunder front line, you can play Taj. You can get away with playing Taj and Boozer together inside when Noah's not in the game, and still rebound well, not have to worry too much about getting destroyed inside. And maybe that's the way they can make up for Ashik not being there.
Nate Robinson tonight on national television.
Jesus.
Bulls fans are getting excited too. They're starting to buy it. They're going through the Nate Robinson experience.
I really hope they do. One funny moment last night was there's this huge Michael Beasley fan on Twitter that just loves to let me know whenever he's had a good quarter. And he's like, hey, 20 points, 13 shots. What do you think about that? Let me see what he finished at. I mean, they still won, and he had a decent game. He had 20 points on 13 shots, ended with 21 points on 21 shots. There you go. There's Michael Beasley. He had 21, 15, and 7. Fantastic statistical game for him, and he was good. But do not buy into it too early. With Nate Robinson, buy into it, because it's hilarious if you do.
And they, that Suns team squeaked past the Bobcats.
Yeah.
So, you pegged the Suns pretty well. They're pretty much what you said they were going
to
be.
That team just seems very obvious to me. It doesn't mean they can't win some games, but yeah, I don't know. I'm just not overly impressed. Your predictions for tonight's game. Who do you have, Thunder Bulls? Who do you have, Clippers Blazers?
I've got the Thunder. I think the Thunder will win this one. I like them actually winning by pretty comfortably. I just don't think that Chicago's offense will hang. Maybe I'm wrong, but I tend to believe in the Thunder offense is going to figure it out. When they do, even without Harden, I think they'll get enough. And I like the Thunder bench more than I like the Bulls bench, especially.
Sure.
Trying to figure out where the scoring is going to come from for Chicago is kind of tough, because it's one where you can slow down the Thunder and you're still going to need to score, you know, 95, 100 points.
Luol Deng's going to have to be huge.
Do what?
Luol Deng has to be huge.
Yeah. Against an improving Kevin Durant defense. And Thabo Sefolosha. That's another thing to keep in mind. They got pretty good defenders there. And then it's what, Clippers Blazers?
Yeah. You
know, here's what bugs me. If this wasn't a back to back, if last night hadn't happened, I would be confident the Clippers were going to win by double digits. It's a back to back. It's in Portland, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's in Portland. It's a back-to-back in Portland, coming off you just beat the team that knocked you out of the playoffs in a sweep. Like, this is a recipe for Clipper disaster.
Yeah.
Which is annoying to me because I really don't, you know, Ken Berger, CBSSports.com, wrote about it yesterday. Like, he's buying into the Blazers, and he wrote about Damian Lillard today. Like, he's buying into the fact that they're not going to be terrible and that they can be pretty good, good to pretty good. I'm not buying it. I don't see from this team, from their performances, you know, even with the win over the Lakers, like, I just don't see what there is to really be like, okay, this is going to sustain. I think this is a big game for Portland. If they can win this game, I might start to buy in, because this is one that sets them up well, but it's against a superior opponent. So if they can win a game that they have a good chance of winning against a superior opponent, I will start to believe.
I think we are going to see a monster, monster coming out party from Damian Lillard, like 36 points monster game. And I think that they just eke out a win at home. I'm not going to buy into them yet, but I think we will see Damian Lillard shine when he's got the spotlight on him.
There's so many factors that make me like really nervous about this. For I've got Clippers winning 98-96, but like LaMarcus Aldridge is going to be mad. Like, doesn't like playing the Clippers. Like, they've got history with him and Griffin.
Yeah,
and he doesn't like the fact that Griffin gets all the attention when he's probably a superior power forward. Well, there is one kind of factor that could outplay this, which is it depends on how DeAndre Jordan plays. If DeAndre Jordan shows, because he had another game last night where it's like, DJ's looking legit.
He was fun last night.
I also really like Maynard. I wrote about this for the Inbounds this morning, right? About the Clippers, what really impressed me is that they can do so many things with that roster. Like, they can build an entirely different set from their starting five. They can do a hockey lineup that can compete.
Yeah.
Like a hockey, they could do a hockey transition. And it, you know, with Maynard, you can do Maynard, Griffin, or Crawford or Green, whichever one you want.
You mean Bledsoe? You know,
yeah, Bledsoe. Oh, yeah. Bledsoe, Crawford, or Green. They've got so much versatility. They've got so much depth. They haven't even gotten the other guys back. And Lamar Odom is still, you know, way out there on the ledge. So, they've got a lot of things I think that they can do really well. And even Ryan Hollins, because he's only having to play like select minutes and is being balanced with Turi off, like, he's not hurting anybody, which is kind of the objective. So I think, I don't know, I still like the Clippers, but it's a definite trap game, I think, for Portland.
Final prediction question for you. More points tonight, Nicholas Batum or DeAndre Jordan?
I'll go with Nicholas Batum.
Okay. I think I like that too.
I'll go with Nicholas Batum. I think it's, you know, Jordan has less opposition, but it's back-to-back. I never want to go with a center who's inconsistent on a back-to-back.
Yeah, the thing that makes me consider it is J.J. Hickson will be rotating from the weak side. I mean, he'll be on Jordan, but he'll be rotating on plays from the weak side, and he's not exactly the recover type.
Right.
And I think you'll get a lot of lobs.
Yeah. Maybe a city of lobs. Perhaps a city of lobs.
Lobville.
Lobtropolis.
Lobtropolis. Well, Matt, thank you for joining us. And I felt like this was, you know, easily our best podcast of the day.
It's definitely top five.
Yeah. All right. Thanks, Matt. That's all for the CBSSports.com basketball podcast. Thanks for listening. Enjoy the doubleheader tonight. We will talk to you tomorrow.